Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for ranks, flanks, and kings of war. Join your hosts as they delve into the world of Panathar and bring you worldwide coverage of all things Kings of War.
Welcome to Countercharge. I'm Dale Hastings.
And I'm Matt Croger. Welcome to another episode. You might have heard Dale on our last Clash of Kings episode for 2024. If you are someone that skips a bit more of the tournament coverage, I caught up with Dale, well, a little bit about, you know, his role as a teacher and building a club there and how he was going in the tournament with, and Dale reached out afterwards and said, you know, we could do an episode on running a youth club. And I think it's a bit of a hot button topic in wargaming in general, is that, well, certainly Kings of War anyway, probably the lack of youth that has certainly seemed to be in the local scenes. So I thought it was a topic that was really worthwhile doing. And so I certainly appreciated Dale coming up with it. And so some of this stuff that we talk about as it regards to youth clubs can be applicable to clubs in general. Some of it is specific to Australia, so, you know, please don't take this as general international advice. But you might still be able to get some ideas, and there might be similar processes in your country or state. But thanks for joining us, Dale.
No, thank you, Matt. Thank you very much for inviting me back, and it's quite nice to be here and not hungover, and I really appreciate it. So thank you.
We had to get non-hangover Dale in at some point. Now, Dale, before we get into a bit of a background, we generally do just jump into a bit of a hobby update or what you might have been working on in the hobby. Have you? What have you been beavering away on?
Well, as you know, I bought that absolutely ridiculous vehicle to CanCon last time, and I've made it my mission to go to as many tournaments as I can. And probably last tournament I went to was Ashes of the Warforges in Ipswich, which was an ambush tournament. It was awesome. I had the best time.
Actually, I do recall seeing you in the photos, and I was like, what's Dale doing up there?
Yeah, I know. I went all the way. I even slept in that tiny little van. It was great. But, yeah, after I finished that, I had a great time because I brought an undead army. I had a trial army that I used for basically just teaching kids at the school, and I thought, well, I'm actually going to play this, and I took it up there. But when I came back, I really wanted to try something new. So I had a whole bunch of 3D printed goblins sitting around, like 300 of them. And so I started putting a goblin army together ready for ShireCon the 20th of April, 21st of April. Yeah, well, there was a plan. There was a plan. Plans come unstuck. So, yeah, I have been painting on average 5 goblins a day, and I'm a good third of the way through, but I've had to pivot because the timetable for our own youth club has moved up, and so I can no longer go to ShireCon. Instead, I'm trying to go to the one in Toowoomba, Contest of Fools. I'm going to go at the 5th of or the 4th of or April, and it's going to be, yeah, good fun. I'm going to drive up, have another go, but this time I'll be taking the old dwarves. Because nothing's painted yet.
Yeah, that's awesome. Wow. That maybe we need to put a picture of that vehicle in the show notes as well. Because it is a sight to behold, the Hastings tournament vehicle.
And for anyone who's met me knows that I'm quite a short fella and I fit just beautifully in the back of that vehicle. So, yeah, it's good fun. 600 cc's of fury. Yeah, how about yourself, Matt? What have you been working on?
Well, I haven't been getting a lot of painting done because, frankly, you are experiencing a rare evening at the moment where the 2- and 4-year-old are in bed before 8 o'clock. I said to my wife, do you know, the only 2 nights recently that they've gone to bed at a reasonable time where we would have together, then I've got a podcast coming. And she goes, yes, I am very aware. I haven't done a lot of painting. I posted a picture in Countercharge. I finished a horde of stalwarts. So I'll use those at the special ones, with the heroes of Hodenberg, I think they're called. So I'll use them as that. And they've got the bigger dragon topiary piece in the middle. And I've started working on a couple of regiments of juggers. I'm waiting on a big base order because I've got to base up a couple of the lawnmowers. And I've actually been doing heaps of printing because I'm really wanting to update a fair bit of the terrain from Clash. So I can tell you, and as you would appreciate as a fellow printer, Dale, when I'm printing terrain pieces, I am chewing through a serious amount of resin.
Well, so would I. I prefer using the old FDM printers for my terrain. It's just a lot cheaper and easier. But yeah, it doesn't look as smooth though, does it?
It doesn't look as smooth. I haven't got an FDM anymore either. Problem is also with the resin having to print it in a few more pieces, and if it cures a bit funny, I am going to have to use some filling on it. But I think I've got a half a dozen big pieces of blocking terrain out, but I've done probably a good 30 or 40, maybe even more obstacles to replace most of ours. So I just want to move towards having a bit better on average looking stuff for Clash. You know, now that we own all the mats and and the boards are there, you know, just having everything go to that next level is something I'm keen on doing. Yeah, so that's primarily what we've been up to, and we'll have to have a massive painting day.
Yeah, I've been a bit sneaky. I've been using rattle cans. I've been 3D printing with an FDM, just doing trees, doing buildings. I've been using a foam cutter to cut up foam, and we're just getting a whole bunch of little tables ready for our club that's going to open soon.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I started on trees today as well, because I just think too they're just that little bit more durable. You know, you don't lose the flock everywhere and, you know, snapping twigs and things quite as much. So there's a few designers that I like, and at the same time actually as printing that, I've been printing a whole bunch of pieces that I'll be using when I start putting together the Northern Alliance. So I've got a Viking-esque theme going together for them. So it's got like they'll be gathered around a table, and there's barrels and, you know, animal skin covers for things, and it's hopefully going to come together nicely.
That's wicked. That sounds awesome.
Now, we've touched on the hobby, but I don't think we did a real who is Dale Hastings too much. We touched on your employment during the Clash episode, but do you want to give us a little bit of a background, Dale, the part of the country you live in and, you know, how you found the hobby and all of that?
Oh, awesome. All right. Well, I'm currently living in Port Macquarie, but prior to that, I was living in Sydney. I went to Cherrybrook Technology High School back in the noughties. And I was fortunate enough to have an amazing teacher at that school by the name of Anthony Felton. And he was a music teacher. He still is a music teacher. And he was running the games club. Every Friday, we would finish classes. We'd go straight to one of the rooms in the school. And no joke, there was about 60 students who would rock up to this club every single Friday. And so it was all highly organized. Everyone had responsibilities, roles. We had students organizing things. And it was just really just the highlight of high school was that I had this club to go to every single Friday, and I got to add to it and contribute. And I think, yeah, even I kept coming back even when I was a uni student. We're working with children's check. We'd come back into school on a Friday arvo, beats drinking. And we'd work with the kids even though we weren't even members of the school anymore. We weren't students. So it was really good to come back to that and get that experience. And we kept adding to the club collection, particularly with terrain. I think at one stage we were running a big convention, Clash of the Titans, and I think we had well over 200 feet of board all made for 40K and fantasy, ready to go. So over a long time, these clubs can really grow.
Yeah, wow, that's incredible. And I mean, and like you said, it was it had its own big gaming, like multi-system gaming convention, didn't it? So, you know, I guess that's peaking in the last glory days of Warhammer and things like that.
Oh, yeah, certainly. It's still going on now. It's on the 20th and 21st of April. It's on the same time as ShireCon. So I think we might have made a minor error when we were scheduling it. But, yeah, we're only running, I think, two big tournaments this time, Lord of the Rings and 40K. So, yeah, we've got two big tournaments running. Not as big as it used to be. We're looking at that in the future. Yeah, it's hard to run an event, and that's a whole different kettle of fish, as you know, running events and, you know, trying to keep it relevant with shifting demands and whatnot. But, yeah, so I did what most people did. I decided IT was really good, and I would study at Macquarie Uni trying to do IT for 3 years. I worked out that mathematics is pretty difficult and there's no girls in IT, so I eventually went to the language faculty and had a mad time. And then, you know, I left with a Bachelor of Arts. I did what anyone does with a Bachelor of Arts. We run away to Kalgoorlie and work in the gold mines. So we did that for a bit. And eventually I got a bit sick of that and decided I'd have a go at teaching. So I did a teaching degree next. And here we are 10 years later. I'm a high school teacher, still am. And I'm, thoroughly enjoying it. It's a good career.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it's awesome. I think it's, we're going a little bit off gaming, aren't we? But I think a lot of times it's just so unrealistic, I think, for an 18-year-old to really know what they want to do, right? You know, my wife's got two health degrees that she doesn't use. It's on about her most recent job was about like the 12th job in Canberra for 10 years, but like she's finally found the one she's enjoyed, which is, you know, in construction work and like smashing it. So like doesn't need any of the qualifications she's got, you know, first woman for Lendlease, a multinational, to take paid maternity leave, you know, as a construction worker. And it took her that long to find it. Like I just think, you know, you got to find what you love, don't you?
Exactly. And I think it's a bit of a trap some people fall into. They think that you've got to study something and then go into that field. You know, there's a benefit to studying something that you just love and you're just learning it for knowledge's sake. No one says you have to go into a health sector because you have a health degree, or even if you have an education degree, to go into the education sector. You're learning for learning's sake, and I think that's a really powerful part. So, yeah, anyway, not about education. We're here to talk about games. Let's do games.
We are, yes, and you're an expert on setting up clubs. I mean, you alluded to the early days, but I think you've done this multiple times since then. So what's your experience? Why are we listening to Dale Hastings on this topic?
Oh, well, yes, I've had the benefit of being a public school teacher, or formerly. I've moved from school to school, and every couple of years you get to a school and you go, you know what, there's a space for this here, and you start up a club. And then you get a group of students, you form a community, and eventually you got to move on. But setting up those clubs, the experience has been pretty similar each time. And there are challenges and there's ways to overcome them. And there's certain steps you should take, particularly when you're forming a club. But I've got to say, this time, this latest club that I've set up is actually the first one that's independent of a school. So there's been some new steps that I've had to learn and some new challenges to overcome and more people to talk to. But we'll talk about that as we get into forming a club.
Yeah, and perhaps like forming a club separate. It's interesting, isn't it? Because, if it's separate to a school, it might be more challenging to promote in some ways. Having said that, if you're not a teacher at a school, there's probably more hesitation about people coming to a school of children saying, can I set up a club, than there's ever been. So, I think for a lot of people, if you're not a teacher, that probably going external to a school at first is probably the path of least resistance in a way.
Can be, yeah. There's ways to get about it. You got to talk the talk. And, yes, there's ways to do that. So we can touch on that as well. So there's lots of options out there for starting a club, but we'll get to that. The question is, why would anyone want to actually run a club? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I think like there's probably multiple motivations, and this again doesn't need to apply to just youth, but I mean, what would you see as the main reasons to set up a club, Dale?
Oh, there's lots of useful ones, but one of the things you can do is, particularly for a particular game scene or a particular system, is you can build a local scene that way. You can start with young fellas and young girls. You get them interested, you get them hooked while they're young, and then as they turn 18 and they start joining the sort of adult community, if you will, then you've got this steady influx of new people. You don't have a huge deluge coming in. It's just this nice, steady, healthy trickle, which is really healthy for any community to have that steady influx of new members. But, you know, the other things you can do is, it could just be that you really are passionate about something and you want to turn your passion into something that you could give back to the community with. Games is one of those things.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that might be something you maybe don't always think about in a gaming context as a way to give back. But I think if historically you look at perhaps the type of kids that have been participating in gaming, which, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think has changed over time, but there would have been like probably a higher percentage of isolated kids, maligned for different reasons, you know, ostracized, you know, a bit different. And I think if you're someone that's come from that that kind of thing, that like giving back in that kind of way can be a really awesome thing. And like I said, I don't think it's so much that anymore, but there's still a tendency towards that. You know, at some point, you know, gaming has become a little cooler than what it was.
Yeah, and the actual, like, when you say gaming, like, that is actual, like, you know, the last 40 years has actually changed quite a bit. You know, we don't really, when you look at a town, particularly a country town or regional town, there's not really a huge amount of space for youth to socialise if it's not football or boxing or soccer or something like that. If you're not part of a sporting team, there's often not these opportunities for you to meet new people. And so these clubs provide that, you know, whether you've got an issue socializing or you just like to paint war Barbies and push them across the table, then, yeah, having that space for them is just really important. And a lot of friendships get formed at these venues. And they teach these young fellas and girls a lot about how to socialize and, yeah, how to interact with other people and how to become comfortable.
And I think that's one of the that's one of the great things about Kings as well in general, and particularly with the advent of things like printing, is that probably more than ever you do have an opportunity to express yourself on the table, whether that be through the types of colours you're picking, you know, the types of models you're either picking from the Mantic range or printing. Like I've like very deliberately moved towards Mantic stuff, but there's still like ranges that I will print and turn into an army because I just love them and I love an idea I can do them. So you get that opportunity for artistic expression. And I think that's particularly with Kings as big as a component as it's ever been, and probably bigger.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think just when you think modern gaming, most people go, oh, computer games. And while there's a social element to that and there's teamwork, but there's not really much creativity involved. And I think actually getting someone to build something, make something, I think it's got a huge value in it that is not really given that sort of that opportunity as it used to be back in the day. So I think it's good. We've got to bring some of the old stuff back, I figure. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, for sure. Now, one of the main things, I guess, when you're looking to set up a youth club, will be, are you allowed to run it? And there'll probably be a number of things that govern that. One, probably not having a serious criminal history will be one thing. But what are some of the other things that might govern whether you can run it?
Yeah, so this is probably a big one. Like if you want to work with children and it's not optional, you'll find there's always going to be some sort of government mechanism whether you're in the United States or Australia or England or whatever. It could be called anything. Like in my state, New South Wales, it's called a working with children's check. I think in Queensland it's called a blue card or something silly like that. Either way, you've got to apply from the government and be checked out and approved to work with children, and that's just a safety thing. And, yeah, usually that does involve you not having a serious criminal history. Some could be quite strict, you know. You must be a suitable person. You must have a fit and proper person to hold that kind of office, and that might be that you can have a clear criminal history in general. You know, you haven't been caught drink driving or a bit of Sunday shoplifting, if you will. You haven't been caught doing anything like that. So you've got to consider that. I mean, I know a lot of people are really passionate and want to run clubs, but I know quite a few people have a colourful history, if you will, and it's kind of precluded them from participating. Yeah. In New South Wales, like I said, it's called the Working with Children's Check. If you're doing this for work, I think it's $80 to get the check done. If you're a volunteer, it's free. And, you know, you send in some documents, you go to the local, like motor or service New South Wales it's called now, but basically the motor office, and they just look at the documents and sign you off after all their background checks, and then you're cleared. You get a number and you give that to anyone who asks, who needs it, and it basically says that you're cleared to work.
And this would be to have an official role within the youth club, correct? And then I guess for you to be responsible for any other adult that comes in contact with the youth club?
I'd say, and this will change from state to state, but in New South Wales, if you're spending time with children, even in a voluntary sense, you need a working with children's check. So I've got some 18-year-old fellas who are going to volunteer to help me run this PCYC club we've got coming up. And they all need their working with children's checks, even though 6 months prior they were students at my school. So this is the interesting thing. As soon as
well, for sure. And it can be very strict, and you can assume that you might have it. Like, so, for example, some people who work in health, like myself, who may work with kids on occasion, may assume that they have it, but you don't actually. You're approved to work with children whilst you are in your role as a healthcare provider. But if you then go into any other role, you actually still need a working, well, in the ACT, it's a working with vulnerable people's check. So it applies to young people and the elderly. Yeah. So it will differ, but don't make an assumption, I guess, that your normal employment automatically, you know, allows you to do it.
Yeah. You don't want to stuff that one up. It's definitely not a good look to mix that one up. So, yeah, always check with the local government, whatever it is. Go to the police, ask them about it, chat to a lawyer, anyone who knows, or even chat to another club. See anyone, cricket club, footy club, talk to them. They'll tell you what they have to do. Chances are you'll have to follow those steps. And I found a nice little resource, and we'll put the link in the podcast, won't we? And that will be a very useful place to start.
I guess another consideration, Dale, is to consider, like, do you even need an organisation? So which will have some variations, I guess. What's your, I guess, experience with different versions of organisations and how that might affect setup?
Yeah, so with adults, like if you're running an adult club, one of the benefits, I suppose one of the things you can do is instead of just being a group of guys who meet at someone's house and play in the garage, you want to sort of make it a formal club. You'd go and get yourself incorporated as a not-for-profit or a non-profit entity. And that's where you form a committee, you get a bunch of guys together, you ratify a charter, you do this whole process. In New South Wales, there's a whole process for it where you register your organisation as basically a not-for-profit business. And it's run by your committee, and you have to follow steps. And there's a bit of a price for incorporating and registering the association. But yeah, you also then have to get something else called public liability insurance, which is quite expensive. So that can cost probably $500 to $800 a year. And if you're just a bunch of guys meeting together, you know, that might be an expense that you don't really want to foot the bill for every, you know, 12 to 18 months. So that's one of the things. You might want to just go back to being Garage Hammer at that point and hanging out.
Is that only if you're incorporated or if you're any kind of official not-for-profit or organisation?
That's if you're incorporated, what will happen. But, you know, even if you're just a bunch of guys and you want to rent out a venue to actually run your club at, you are going to need public liability insurance. And the benefit of it being an incorporated entity is, you know, the buck stops with the entity. They're not going to take your house if something goes wrong, and you have to pay lots of money for burning down the venue. And your public liability insurance will help cover that too.
And is that only if you're meeting in a specific venue, or it will cover you at whatever venue?
Whatever venue too, yeah. Like if you want it to be your house, you can use the public liability insurance, I believe, to cover any accidents there. So let's say one of your mates comes over and has a bit to drink and cracks your skull, you know, you're not getting sued by your former best mate for all his medical bills because he cracked his skull on your steps or something. The public liability insurance would have that. Of course, you know, there's a whole lot of limitations. Don't take my word for it. Speak to an insurer. Speak to an expert. But that's the big one. That's the biggest cost with any club is your insurance, which you need, because no one will rent anything to you unless you've got it.
Speaking of which, Countercharge Today is brought to you by Australian Insurance Brokers Incorporated. No, just
exactly.
And so I'm guessing there might be an option of where there might be existing clubs that could take you on.
Yeah, and that's part of the challenge. I think in nearly every state, if you want to run a youth club, that's fine, but youth members can't be members of a youth club. They can't form a committee or anything like that. So if you're one or two blokes or three blokes trying to run an incorporated entity and it's just three of you, that might not be enough to actually qualify to be an incorporated entity. You won't have a full board unless you get other parents on board and other people to volunteer and stuff. So sometimes it's just not an option to actually get incorporated because either it's too expensive or you just don't have the bodies. So what do? Well, as you said, you fall under another club. So we call this usually under the auspice of another club, and this is done through something called an auspice agreement, which is a nice little document that'll outline what your responsibilities are as sort of like a sub part of that other club. And it clearly states what you have to do and that you're under the supervision of the other club and you're under their public liability insurance. So that's the big one. That is the route we've taken because we've fallen to operate underneath the auspice of the PCYC, which is just opening in our town.
Yes, which in Australia is a national organisation, right?
Yeah, it's a police citizens youth club. And it's a big organisation. They're trying to outreach to youth. They run sporting programs, but they're also really interested in things that don't involve boxing or footy.
Okay, because it's cheaper not to have contact sport gatherings?
It certainly is. And you know what? Nerds need a place to go to. So that's what they're doing.
So you guys have gone under the PCYC, and YMCA would be another common one in Australia, or like you've done before, schools.
Yeah. There's another option. You could also approach churches. So if you're looking for, you've decided you want to run a club, you've found a, you know, you've got an audience for it, you've got a couple of volunteers to help you run it. There's other venues you can look after, and you can probably approach a church. Depends on the church, depends on the people who run that church. They may be really open to opening up their hall on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon if they're not already running something. These churches are often looking for an excuse to get youth into their venue. So they, at the very least, they can look at all the mad posters of Jesus on the wall and learn something while they're there. Some may actually ask you to incorporate some sort of scripture in there. That's really up to you and them to negotiate. But, for a cheap venue or a free venue, it's not a huge price when you think about it. They also might extend their public liability insurance over you.
Yeah, and you're right. And they may, like you said, they may not ask anything of you, right? They might hope that, you know, pure presence conjures up enough questions that gets a person or two interested in the faith.
Yeah, exactly. So that's an option. Don't turn your nose down at it. You yourself don't have to be particularly religiously motivated. You don't have to be a member of the church. It would certainly help, I imagine. But it's an avenue to explore. Like as clubs, we've approached men's sheds. We've even offered to mow their lawns in exchange for space. You know, we've tried everything to secure venues, and you really got to be creative sometimes. But you got churches. We've got our PCYC, the YMCAs. They're really keen. But the other thing is you can actually go through schools. It's just you've got to be able to frame it in a certain way. Probably the easiest thing to do is if you know a teacher or you are a teacher, see if you can actually access those spaces. Most schools will let you have it for free, especially public schools. If you involve their students and you can link it to educational outcomes, which is really easy, you can likely get that space for free. And they probably won't even ask you about public liability insurance. But that is a bit of an interesting legal ground, because if you're not a member of the school will probably not want to take too much responsibility for you. So that's a bit of a minefield. You might want to get in writing from the principal if you're covered by, as running a school activity, if you're covered by the school. That may require you to get public liability insurance, but I don't imagine it's terribly excessive at that stage. It might be the smallest amount you need. Again, check with the principal. Schools are a great venue. Never turn down a school. It's just that your hours might be limited and you probably won't be able to access it on a weekend. It'll be something like an afternoon or evening session.
Yeah. And like I'd imagine, particularly with kids, you know, having that venue or that strong association with one place is really important, you know, like not a moving club.
Well, that's it. And that is one of the challenges too. Like you need, when you're dealing with students, with young people, you need a steady venue. I know some clubs, they're able to move from one venue to another and they've got everything online and they're able to be quite coordinated. With kids, if you really want to inspire confidence that you know what you're doing, you're having a steady venue, you're open all the time. You know, you don't shut down for odd periods or whatever. You it's same place, same time, every week, that kind of thing. That inspires confidence, it inspires regularity, and parents know that you're the real deal when you do that. If you're suddenly shutting the doors, you're starting to look a bit flaky. If you don't have the same venue every single week and you've got to move, it doesn't look terribly organized. So, you know, for an adult club, that's fine. You know, we make do, but for a kids club, you've really got to look at what it looks like to outsiders as well.
With kids, I think you're probably, when you think about giving back to the community, I think these days too, like, you're actually probably providing an opportunity for some parents to bond with their kids over something. Like, it is most likely, particularly at first, that, you know, a parent comes with their child, right, depending on the age, of course. You know, and it might actually be the parent turning up because it's a passion of theirs, and, you know, the kid goes and sees other kids playing, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's actually encouraging a family to come together over something.
Oh, absolutely. And I've got probably like a dozen stories of that where kids and their parents have bonded over a game, whether it's Magic cards or it's, you know, Warhammer or whatever. You know, there's that opportunity for them to get into it. And, you know, I hear from parents just what an effect like clubs like this have had on their child's well-being and how excited they get every week, and just what an important like part of their life the clubs have become. And these clubs also provide those opportunities for kids to give to the community. They're creating their own community, and they're creating an opportunity for their parents to contribute as well. And a lot of parents are more motivated to do so if their kids are actually in the club too. So it's another thing to tap. I mentioned earlier that some clubs run Discord and they're able to meet online and do things like that. And then organize a venue. Probably a big thing you've got to understand with kids is you can't have contact with them outside of the club. You've got to keep things within the club and limit everything else. It's almost like you become a totally different human being when you're at the club. And when that club's wrapped up, like, that person doesn't exist until next week. You don't have contact with these students outside. You definitely don't have contact online. That's just a bad idea. If you have to use an online mechanism to organize things with the club, you need to look at how you're organizing it, because you do not want to have that kind of contact on the internet, because you're opening yourself up to a whole lot of liability. You know, it's shady. It's not that great. Have a single venue. Get everyone there. It looks really professional. If you want to communicate with parents, communicate with the parents. If you want to do a newsletter, do a newsletter. But, yeah, do not go contacting the youth individually. It's just a bad idea, even on a chat room or whatever.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that would apply not just to online but phones, right, just even text messaging. You know, it's just like.
Absolutely, just, yeah.
You can think it is for the most genuine reason, but it is not worth the risk to anyone.
Yeah, it's just not. It's just not. And same thing, like a small country town, you go to the shops, you're going to run into them. Just keep it friendly, keep it distant, don't make it weird, you know, just move on, do your own thing, you know. I know you might want to be really friendly with these kids and get to know the parents more and all that stuff, but nah, just leave it for the club. It's just a better idea, because you wouldn't want anyone taking it the wrong way.
For sure. And it only takes one misinterpretation, right, to produce significant risk. So, yeah, I think that's great advice. And so, yeah, so let's just say we've decided you can run the club. You've got your Working with Vulnerable People card. Yeah, maybe you have found another club to oversee you. So maybe they're bearing the risk in terms of insurance and things like that. What are your actual responsibilities then if you're in charge of the club that's coming under another banner?
So that's often going to be defined by that auspice agreement that we were talking about. But, yeah, you're looking at administration. You're going to have to keep some paperwork. You must keep a ledger of your members and attendance, so you're going to need people to sign in. You are going to have to maintain a register of your child protection checks for your other volunteers, and that has to be up to date. Usually you have to pass that information up to the higher club first, and that has to be done before they come on site. So that's important. Don't ever stretch that rule. Everyone has to have a working with children's check, because that's your legal requirement to make sure that they do before they work with your youth. And the other thing you might have to do depends on the club arrangement. You may have to keep a record of club funds, or you might be required to direct every single penny through that higher organization. And that depends on your agreement.
Okay. Yep. And so that, for some, depending on that agreement, it might even be something somewhat as complex as keeping it in accounting software or something, like as in a perfect record. Like obviously that could be done in Excel if there's not many costs and incomings, but depending on the size of your club, you might actually have to, you know, take it, be legit.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? That money that you raise might not even be legally considered your money. That would belong to the higher club. So you'd have to get permission to spend what you've raised. That's fine. It's all part of your agreement. And that's what you work within. Yeah. And if you don't like it, well, you can have the fun job of finding a new venue or a new club to take you on. That can be a hard one. So they really do call all the shots, but that's them's the breaks. You can work within the lane, within your lane, I find, once it's been clearly set. But yeah, there is a difficult one too.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of comes down to like worst-ish case scenario.
Yeah, so like let's go into it. Mandatory reporting is, yeah, look, depending on your local area, like your government, you may, when you work with the youth, you may be what they call a mandatory reporter. That's what it's called in New South Wales. There's other terms in other states and other countries, but just so you know, like what we're talking about is normally teenagers at this part of their life, they're starting to drift away from their family and from their parents, and they're starting to seek bonds with other adults, and, you know, they engage more and more with the wider community. That's normal. That's to be expected. But you also may have a couple of members at your club where in their life, you're the only stable adult that they know. You're the only safe person. And this means that these students may occasionally open up to you that things are not quite right where they're coming from. And so it might say that they basically reveal something to you that you're at risk of that, sorry, that they're at risk of significant harm. And it can be some really gross stuff. It could just be some dumb things that are happening at home, whatever it is. You're going to hear these stories, and I can guarantee it'll happen to pretty much anyone who works with you. It's going to happen at least once while you're working there. As a teacher, I've had it's happened probably 2-3 times a year where students have opened up. And sometimes it happens in totally like unexpected places. I think once I sat down on a school bus with students, and I just happened to sit next to a random student who just opened up about this really sordid history that she had when she just moved to the school and what was happening in her family. And that, I can tell you, that took quite a bit of quite a lot of paperwork and quite a lot of meetings afterwards to follow that one up. But that is part of running a club. It's the responsibility. If a student a young person reveals that they're at risk of harm, you have to act. And there's a process for that as well. Must be the same for you, Matt, being in the health sector.
Yeah, it's interesting. So if it comes from a child, and I think, you know, sometimes the areas can get a little bit grey, and as you say, there are certain roles that are basically regarded as mandatory reporters. But you know, I just think we have such a responsibility to protect the vulnerable, and particularly our youth, you know, from harm. And so I think if you think it's at all grey, consider yourself a mandatory reporter. You know, we've actually had a couple of episodes adjacent where it's been reported the other way, where someone's disclosed to us things that they may have done. Mm. And that it actually gets grayer there. And we've chosen to mandatory report because, you know, that is, I think that in the end, that is the right thing to do for the protection of youth. You know, it's, I don't think you ever feel good for it. Even if you're in a specific work area, you're never necessarily appropriately trained to do it.
Yeah, it's such a curveball, isn't it? Every time.
It is. And I also think, though, you mentioned you might be only the safe person. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going secret squirrel about the reporting either. Like, I think communication in those situations is so important. In the situations we've had at work, we've literally said to the person in front of us, you know, well, just so you know, that is going to be something that I have to communicate. Like, I am duty bound to now, you know.
Yeah, I am a mandatory reporter. I will say this. You know, I'm here to listen, but you should be aware that I'm going to have to take this further, and I will. And that's probably the hard thing, as you said, is it can go the other way. You know, it seems pretty clear what you've got to do in the circumstances that I've had where students are going, well, this is happening at home, or, you know, my uncle's done this at home or whatever. And, you know what to do. It's pretty clear cut. That's not right, and you act. But the problem is it can get a little bit tricky. Not tricky. It just gets murky for you, for people, is when someone's reporting something that's happened within your own organisation. So they might, some one of the young people might make an allegation against one of your volunteers, for instance. And this is the tricky bit. This could be your best mate. But unfortunately, you are legally bound to report it. You know, it's not your job to investigate, no matter like how frivolous or how vexatious the actual accusation might be. You actually don't have a choice. You have to report it. And usually that means going through your auspice organization or going to the police. And yeah, it's not pleasant, but that's part of the job. And that's what you take on. It's one of your responsibilities as a youth organizer.
100%. And it's also not your place to deny plausibility or possibility to the person making the claim to you, because, you know, you don't know, like, whether you believe it's plausible or not, you don't know. And the harm that can be done through denial is just so huge. You don't have a choice at that point. So, like, it's a big factor to consider when you're taking on this role.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's usually your auspice organization will provide training for that. So you will come to see what role you play. And I can guarantee it's going to happen. It's not going to happen every week, hopefully not. But, you will have people open up to you at some stage. And, you'll be trained, but you just need to know that that is going to be part of the job.
Well, maybe we move on from the more grim elements.
Yeah. Let's talk fun stuff.
Let's get into the how to run it. How do we make it work, Dale?
All right, cool. Well, this is school teaching 101, all right? Dealing with young people. All right, number one tool you have in your bag is establishing a routine. You've got to have a routine. Even if you want a club where it's free form and they explore their creativity and all that, they need a routine. And it doesn't mean you control every aspect, but it should be predictable. It's something you can teach, and you can teach explicitly. You can go, guys, we have a routine. It is going to be this, this, this. And you reteach that every single week, and you do it every single week. That's probably the best thing you can do to have a smooth running club. It sets the culture. You know, it sets the expectation that this is what we do here. And the truth is, like, children, as wild as they are, and teenagers too, they crave predictability. They love it. They love routine. They know, they love knowing what's going to be expected of them and what's going to happen next. So this is, like, particularly true with students who are on the autism spectrum, or youth, I should say, on the autism spectrum, because they are definitely comfortable knowing what's expected of them. There's no surprises. Stick to the routine, and it's comfy.
I think it's true of kids who of any kind of difficulty, whether spectrum or otherwise, or just behavioural difficulties, right, is that, like, at its most simplistic level, a lot of those kids at some level haven't had predictability, like with the more behavioural stuff, not necessarily the spectrum stuff, but behavioural stuff, you know. So, like, predictability, there is safety in predictability for children and for adults, to be honest. But I think it's a great point to have, a specified routine is a great measure.
Yeah. So our routine, this is what we got planned. It may change. And if you do change routine, there's nothing wrong with that. It's often helpful to pre-warn people that things are going to change. They would much rather prefer that. And you can explain why if you want, or you can just say, we need to change this. So this is what's happening. So this is what we're going to be doing at our new club. Because we're going to have new people coming in every week, we're going to, about 10 minutes into the start of the session, we're going to get all our members together. We're going to hold a muster, a bit like a quick tool shed meeting, if you will. And we're just going to keep it sharp and sharp. We're just going to greet everyone. We're going to have the group greet back the organizer. So, you know, I'll say hello, everyone. Everyone will say hello back, you know, that kind of thing. Get a bit of a dialogue going, even though it's a bit AA meeting, but that's fine. And then we're going to set the same expectations. So I keep it the three R's. You know, we've got to have respect for the space and respect for things. So that's looking after our equipment, cleaning up after ourselves, looking after the actual venue. We've got to have respect for others. So it's kind words, kind deeds, letting others talk, hands to yourself. And the last one, and this might seem difficult, but you've got to have respect for yourself. So that means being honest, having integrity, having resilience. You know, if things aren't going your way, you stick with it. So you really got to bring it back to those three respect rules, those three R's all the time. And you need to, you really do with especially young people, repeat that every single time. It's part of your routine. The kids know what they're going to hear from you. They already, before you even say it, they're thinking of the routine and what's expected of them. You're just reinforcing the message. And that's a big one. We usually then jump into welcome circles. So that's where you basically get members to give their name in a circle. So you get maybe 10 people max in a group. You get your other volunteers to break people up if it's a big crew. They just give their name, say, hey, everyone, I'm Bob. Everyone goes, hi, Bob. Again, it's like an AA meeting. But then give them to give a quick hobby update. Just really, what are you working on? Oh, I've been painting goblins this week. Or I really like potatoes or something like that. And we just do that as a bit of an icebreaker, and you make that part of the routine where someone gives a fact about themselves, and it can be something inane, or they update everyone on their hobby, and it's just real short, sharp, next person, get it done in like 5 minutes.
I have a dwarf addiction.
Yeah, I have a dwarf addiction. I love it. we have another rule where I've seen this done at other clubs, and it's something I want to implement, is where we don't do any work talk or any school talk. And I think the message I got at this other club when I saw this happen, they said, you're more than your job and you're more than what you study. And I thought that was a really, really cool message to send young people. And I think that's something we're going to put in our club too.
What do you think for kids, particularly where if you are having kids, say, with there might be a certain presence of spectrum disorders and things, and obviously it takes some resources, but just things like name tags?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just you can get those little things, get them to write their name, slap it on the chest. You could even, long term, you could organise club shirts that have names on the back. That can be useful too. A bit of money required, but, you know, can be an option. Yeah, there's lots of ways to organise things. I think a name tag is a great place to start, just getting people to write it in and write it neatly with a pen, and off you go. That can be part of your sign-in. Sign in, grab a name tag, and that way you know who's signed in because they're not wearing their name tag. So it's good accounting that way. You know, like it's not always going to be smooth sailing. These are young people. They're often trying to test the boundaries.
Yeah, for sure. I think, like you said, you know, obviously if the club's going well, there's going to be new people all the time. So part of that routine, though, is familiarity. Bloody hell.
Yeah. Big words. Here we go.
You know what I'm trying to say. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Seriously. I'm bored from Newcastle. I haven't used anything with more than two syllables in my whole life. the routine is beneficial, and like you might think that they don't respond to it initially, but they're trainable.
Yeah, they are, absolutely. And you know, this comes back to me teaching hat. If I put this back on, you know, like at the very core, and most people are going to really hate me saying this, but if you can train a dog, you can train a teenager, okay? And it is actually based on educational theory, Pavlovian pedagogy, if you will, behaviorism, whatever. You know, it's a real thing. You know, if you can train a dog, you can train.
Send your hate mail to Dale Dot.
No, I have proven this. You'd love this. I had this really ratty year 9 class years ago. And, we're doing something basic in English. We're talking about reading pads and all this and how kids process picture books. And one of the kids said, oh, that's like training a dog. And I said, well, yeah, that's right. And they said, oh, well, that would never work on us. And I said, yeah, but you guys all walked into this room quietly, sat down quietly and got your pens and books out without me asking. So how did that happen? I did lose that class after that. They were not impressed with me. But
Yeah, exactly. I will show
him
wrong.
I had to twist the knife, had to. But that's it. Like, at the end of the day, like, the way it works is this. You know, you be positive and praise the members when they're doing the right thing. And it might seem silly. Like, if a kid's actually playing a game and is really involved, just walk by and say something like, really well there, mate. You're playing so well. Keep going. I like how you're really talking to your opponent and, you know, explaining the rules and you're being really patient. You know, really praise them for what they're doing right. Don't just say good job, but, like, go into detail. What are they doing right? And just, you know, a little word here and there. It'll seem strange when you start. You'll feel like a wiggle going around talking to everyone. But this positive interaction really helps reinforce those positive behaviours. And often a really calm but disapproving stare is often all you need to like correct an incorrect behavior, like a student not doing something correct, like, you know, breaking things, but being rowdy or hands-on behavior or swearing or things like that. You can fix that up by reinforcing that and maybe having a quiet word with them later. You usually reserve your big boy voice for when it's something really dangerous. So, yeah.
Now, this is not good podcasting, Dale, but yep. Can I see your calm, disapproving stare?
Oh, let me see. Which one? I had to bust it out today. Actually, it was great.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
No, I can't.
I felt something.
I just can't.
I felt something. Yeah.
a little tingle, perhaps.
Yeah.
I actually had to bust it out today. I had a young boy. Let's just call him Emmett, right? I had a young boy, mm-hmm. and he decided he'd call me "Yeah, brah" on the way out of class, and I just gave him that, and he sort of tried that again. Oh, yes, sensei, yes, sir. I was like, that's much better. There you go. So.
Obviously, with kids, you know, the routine is one thing, and training them up a bit. But like, how do you incorporate the fun that's going to reel them in? So, like, what have you got around that to give us advice that you should be heading to in every meeting?
Well, here's the juicy bit. So, even if you want them to be self-directed, you've got to have that structure. And depending on where you're coming from, if you started from scratch, you're going to need to teach them the games, and that means getting yourself or your volunteers to break people up into small groups. You want maybe 5 or 6. You generally won't be playing a game. You'll be running it. And it'll probably be that way for like a month or two. Every session, you'll be teaching a new game, getting kids involved. And when they become proficient at them, you then get those kids to teach to the other kids. And that's the big one. You just got to get everyone involved. If you see someone lagging around by themselves, set up one group and then move over and help them. Help them get involved. Because if a student's sitting around bored or a member's sitting around bored, they're not going to come back. They might come back 1 week, but if it happens 2 weeks in a row, they'll go, oh, this isn't very fun. No one will talk to me. Even though, you know, the onus really is on them to talk to people, you've got to help them do that. So that's a big one. Get organized games out. Have a plan. So when it comes to Kings of War, I have a bunch of 400-point armies, which are conveniently made from the ambush boxes. And we have a bunch of 3x3 tables ready to go. We have terrain. We're going to be running games where I'll get maybe 4 people on a 400-point game and everyone controls a unit. And then I teach them the basics of the game. And then what we'll do is we'll get those 4 people to then take up 2 tables and we'll have one versus one. And then we'll start rotating in new players and we'll get new armies and all sorts of stuff going. And that's how we'd teach it. Luckily, like Kings of War is such a simple game, you know. It's easy to learn but hard to master. And that's where we're going to go with that in the club, is really push Kings of War that way.
I think the thing that would frustrate me most with a club potentially, and like, I mean, actually this not so much in Kings of War with the tournaments. We have such a good crew in Kings. But, like, would be, you know, how you organise that space, particularly towards the end. Yeah, you don't want to be the last person, you know. You're going to be busy for the whole of the session. You don't want to be the last person doing everything at the end too, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So that's part of your pack-up as well, is your routine. And this is, I always found pack-up to be like a great source of ownership for the students, well, for the members, I should say. They're not students anymore. They're youth club members, is having a routine for pack-up. And what you do is you'd probably, for your first few weeks, particularly with the new crowd, stop everything early, get everyone back and muster them, and start giving explicit jobs. And explicit is really clear, like, you three there need to collect all the chairs and stack them neatly against that wall. And then you over there, you've got a broom. Your job is to sweep up all the Doritos and dust and put it in that corner there, and so on. You give really explicit jobs so everyone knows exactly what they're doing. You don't want to just go to a teenager, oh, yeah, can you boys just, tidy up a bit? Because they don't know what that means. Some of these kids have never cleaned up in their own house, so they're not going to know what that means. Mm. You need to be really clear about what you're expecting. And often I find is if it's a big venue, have teams, get people organized. You know, you can have a crew that's in charge of the storeroom, in charge of moving stuff to the van if you don't have storage, emptying bins, have a plan as well as an organizer to clean the bathrooms, because some teenagers are just disgusting and you do need to leave your venue in a cleaner condition than when you found it. It's really useful if you can find out who made the mess, because it'd be great if they could clean it. But if not, you might have to do that yourself or get your other volunteers to. That's it. I think probably the worst thing you're going to happen is that you'll have people leaving the club session early and they haven't packed up their gear, or they're getting their friends to pack it up for them. Now, that can be quite annoying because it does slow down the process, and usually someone else ends up cleaning up after them. You'll probably want to chat to that person, see if you can get them to stay the whole time or to pack up early and follow your instructions to get it packed up early. But if they're not, you know, if they're not contributing, it's probably time, after a good chat, probably time to bring in the parents and have a discussion with them, because it could just be that the parents are impatient to go. And if it's important to the club that the child remains the whole time to help clean up because it's fair, then that's a discussion you can have with mum and dad or carer, and they will probably help you organise that.
And I think, again, that's the good thing about routine and expectations, right? Because, like, when you've got that routine and expectations, they'll start to regulate themselves. You know, where are you going? Mm. You know, you haven't cleaned up your spot yet. So, you know, kids are pretty good at getting into each other.
Yeah, they are. And your older students and members will take pride in their job. Like, you know, you could have a team that's in charge of the storeroom. They're gonna have that storeroom so organized, and they're gonna make sure everyone who walks in there does that because they put the time into organizing it. Yeah, that is a really important step, is getting that responsibility and that ownership of the club, because it is, at the end of the day, it's their club. It's for them.
And that's a really important point, isn't it, Dale? Like, whilst you might take the lion's share of the burden and the setting up and the teaching, like, in the end, it's not yours. In the end, it is about is about the kids. And so, like, what would your advice be in that regard, in terms of like making it feel like theirs and building the theirs of that club?
Yeah, probably just using that terminology, letting them know from just straight up that it is their club, and all your correspondence about the club and all your discussions about the club, instead of the club, it's their club, always their club, your club, and so on. So it really is about them. You make them feel like they've owned it. You let them know as members, you know, that equipment there, that's your equipment. You know, it's our responsibility and so on. So with that, to build a club, like as I said earlier, you've got to keep the doors open. You've got to keep it predictable. You always want to encourage new membership, and then probably the best way is bring a friend. So one of our things we're going to be doing is we've ordered our little business cards. And they basically have the club logo on it, the Halflings Games Club. That's the name we're going with. Mm-hmm. And on the back, we just have a little invitation. You've been invited to come to the Halflings Games Club. And every member will get one of these cards. And if they've got a friend who would be interested in going, they can give that card to their friend, and that friend can rock up the next week and learn about the club. And that's what we're hoping to do. That's how we'll get our word of mouth out, is through peers talking to each other.
Yeah, I love that. That's an awesome idea. You know, who doesn't love a little invitation?
Well, exactly. And a cute little, like, this is probably the first business card these kids have ever gotten, so they'll be all over it. And they're dirt cheap to make. So, yeah. The other thing you can do is to build the club is build those structures and those opportunities. And if there's a problem that arises, get the older members to solve the problem for you. Let them come up with a structure that's easy. Let them work it out, and then you help them stress test it so they can implement it and it becomes something that sticks around for a long time. That's giving them the opportunity to contribute to the club. And also, while they're at it, they're learning how a club operates and how people and systems operate. It's really is a no-brainer. Other things you can do is get students to run new games, introduce new games. Get the students to organise the leagues, the tournaments, the campaigns. Really encourage that. And absolutely, the older students should lead, and you should help them to do so. Give them responsibilities. When I was at high school at the Cherrybrook Tech Adepts at Cherrybrook Tech High School, you know, I said we had 60 members. So the teacher there, Mr. Felton, had organised everyone into, we had captains for a particular game. So it was a 40K captain, a fantasy captain, a Lord of the Rings captain. We had other captains for other systems. Then they had sergeants underneath them. So basically, people who helped them organise things as well. And it was all, we had a bit of a hierarchy going, but it was useful because when you had 60 teenagers on a Friday afternoon, you needed organisation and you couldn't do it with just one person. So you needed to really lean on your other students. Just trying to think what other things we could do. We could do slow grows and tale of, you know, four gamers, tale of five gamers. These are really useful because, and we're hoping to do this ourselves with Kings of War, is get people introduced to a hobby and get them participating slowly and building up something. And probably the cool thing is if you run a newsletter, that's the kind of stuff you can publish information about. It's the fact that you had these student or these members building their army, they've made, take pictures of their miniatures, they talk maybe real quickly about what was easy, what was hard, what they really enjoyed, and get that newsletter out to parents and to the other kids. Let them read it and see what their members and their peers are doing, because that builds up interest. People go, wow, that person's had a lot of fun painting 120 goblins. I really want to paint 120 goblins. That sounds fun. I could have a goblin army myself, you know?
Yeah.
And probably the last thing you can do is get them to participate with the wider games community. Involve your club in tournaments, you know, have parents come along to these tournaments, obviously, and see what this crew is, what it is that they're getting into. And I think that's really good to see teenagers, particularly at Clash of Kings. It'd be great if we could have more there and more young people knowing that we're going to have this constant influx of new players.
Yeah, 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 for sure. I totally agree. I think the the health of a community is always going to be greater when you've got that greater diversity in general, to be honest. But like certainly in the age group, you know, I think it will really speak to a health of a community if that could shift.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's something we can do, and I think as a wider community, it's something we can look at. Maybe there are clubs out there already who are considering how to engage the youth. And yes, it has its risks, as we talked about all that sort of mucky stuff. But I think ultimately the dividends is you've got a healthy influx of new members, you've got new players, you've got new interest, and the hobby will remain strong. And I think ultimately that's something we all sort of have a responsibility to do as community members.
I think... you know, one reason that the clubs is particularly pertinent in Australia is there's plenty of regional areas like that, and even not so regional necessarily. Like we're not saturated with game shops, you know. So
no,
the traditional like heartland of gaming groups being an actual game shop just isn't that prevalent here. So having a club that is publicised, whether it's youth or otherwise. Can be so important.
Yeah, and often most of the hobby shopping these days is done online, and we have some great online vendors and whatnot. But yeah, there's not really places to meet anymore, unless you're at a major city. And even for tournaments, I mean, you know, some of us drive 800 kilometres. I don't know how much that is in freedom units, but yeah, it's pretty far to go to a tournament for a weekend. This is a really spread out country, and you need to make these little bases for people to go to in their towns. And it doesn't matter if it's 10 kids or 20 kids or whatever, it's a community.
Well, and even in the cities, like the metro areas, like in Australia, which I'm sure they are in lots of popular cities, like they're ridiculously expensive for a space. So like poor old little game shops are really unlikely to be there. And if they're there, you know, they might not even have enough space for gaming. It might be purely a product sell kind of space. So, yeah, I think there's lots of reasons, but like, yeah, gaming groups are really important for sure. I think it's been a great topic, Dale. Have you got anything else you'd like to add before we wrap it up?
No. Look, I'm just trying to think. Yeah, with clubs. Probably, you know, we talked about space. We talked about organizing things, getting covered. You know, your responsibilities and whatnot. Where do you get money from? That's another big question. And that one can be interesting. You know, PCYCs are quite helpful. They can help you achieve grants and get money from businesses to support the youth. You can run Bunnings barbecues. For those who don't know, internationally we have this big hardware chain called Bunnings, and every Saturday and Sunday they do a barbecue out the front and they raise money. Clubs and clubs run the barbecues for them. It's called a Bunnings snag. It really is a cultural delight. But that money from that would go to a club. You can talk to other clubs that have been well established, and sometimes they have a little bit of money spare and they're happy to help young people get into their hobby as well. So the big moral is the answer is always no until you ask.
Yeah, exactly right. Our international listeners will know Bunnings under another name if they've got young children from Bluey as Hammerbarn. So Hammerbarn in Bluey is Bunnings, undeclared for good reasons.
Yeah. They do a cross promotion. You can actually see, I think you can see Hammerbarn stuff in Bunnings right now.
That's right, actually. Yes, that is correct. I did see that. And I also found out as coming up to running my first Bunnings barbecue ever that Bunnings control the price of the Bunnings snag. It just hadn't occurred to me before.
They do. And they control where the meat comes from and the bread, which makes sense. I think someone sold some dodgy snags. But yeah, that's certainly it. I've done them before as well. Like, you know, we've raised $1,000 for a school in one day. Now that's awesome money.
Yeah. For the sake of rolling a few sausages across a grill, you know?
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Exactly. You haven't heard Bluey until you've heard it in Japanese, because it is going gangbusters in Japan right now. So if you ever get the chance, look it up.
Really?
It is a cracker.
Do you know one of the creators, I'm pretty sure, was actually from an 80s Australian rock band?
He was, yeah. It's the voice of Bandit.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Was it Cream? Was that the band?
Oh, I'm not sure, but I know he's an ex-rocker.
Right. Well, thanks for joining us, Dale. I've really enjoyed that chat. We've got plenty of episodes coming out, guys, so I'm not sure when this one's slated for release. I think in the mid-20s of this month, and we've got a Northern Alliance review upcoming. I think Rob's on the Ratkin review. There'll be plenty of coverage coming from Adepticon. But, yeah, we've got heaps of stuff coming. Dale, are there any shout-outs or anything you'd like to do before we sign off?
Oh, just a big shout-out to the boys at the Port Macquarie Games Club. Go the Drop Bears. Woo!
All right, guys. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode. If you do regional-specific ones, if anyone was to reach out and, like, if it's significantly different in the motherland or in the States, you know, I'm sure people would be interested in hearing that too. I think it's a cracking idea from Dale. And so thanks for joining us, everyone. And until next time, keep countercharging.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by commenting on the Countercharge Kings of War podcast Facebook group. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.